KCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today here on the VCY America Network. Ladies and gentlemen, as flooding, storms, and even heat waves hit various parts of this country, we've been hearing over and over again that this is due to global climate change. We're told that the earth is heating up due to mankind's burning of fossil fuels, and we've got to act quickly to save the planet. Some are pushing President Biden to declare a climate emergency. Well, friends, as we look at all this information coming forth, all the media stories, we have to ask the question, is this climate change or climate hoax? Joining us today, we welcome Selwyn Duke, a writer for The New American. He has also written for The Hill, Observer, The American Conservative, WorldNet Daily, American Thinker, and other print and online publications. Selwyn, thank you for joining us today.
Can you hear me? I'm sorry.
Oh, yep.
Sorry, I had a technical issue. Great to be with you on what I hear is the hottest show around, a lot hotter than the weather.
Yeah, indeed. So the warnings have gone out early last week that we experienced the hottest global temperatures ever recorded. And they're quoting from Climate Reanalyzer, Monday, July 3rd, the warmest global average temperature, 17.01 degrees Celsius, that's 62.618 Fahrenheit. But the following day, July 4th, it was 0.3 of a degree warmer. Is it time for us to panic?
Well, we hear this all the time, as you know, Jim. Oh, it's the hottest day ever, or it's been the hottest month ever. And then we always hear, oh, we have just 10 years or 12 years to save the planet. And we've heard that probably for 30, 35 years.
Yes.
It's just unbelievable. Now, I know The New American has quoted this climate realist, Steve Malloy. He was talking about this climate reanalyzer, Jim. And what he said is, no, the Earth's hottest days were not July 3rd to 5th, 2023. That's based on bogus computer modeling. That's what he tweeted. He said, actual global surface temperature measurements indicate today's temperature, 57.47 degrees Fahrenheit, is slightly cooler than that on April 24th. So, I mean, we've just heard this for so long, and it's such utter nonsense. You can stop me if I'm going on too long,
no, but fine.
You have to remember, I understand that we can't actually ascertain what the exact global temperature is. American Thinker, a very good website, just reported on this. According to them, we derive a lot of these measurements from 11,000 weather stations worldwide. Now, I understand that the climate alarmists are going to say, well, there are satellites as well. I understand that. But these weather stations, according to American Thinker, the problem is they're not situated evenly or distributed evenly throughout the world. You don't have that many of them, for instance, in the Arctic and Antarctic regions. So we may not be getting accurate temperature readings from the coldest parts of the planet and averaging those into the overall average.
Mm-hmm.
So my point here is that it's a very, very confusing picture. And this has to be understood because the left will love to say, well, the debate is over. That's it. The science is settled. No, it's not. And you know what I learned a long time ago, Jim? When you hear the debate is over, that usually means the person is out of arguments.
Yeah.
That's what that usually means.
Well, you know, let me go back in time to the year 2008. I have a brief audio clip of John Kerry at that time warning us about an ice-free Arctic. Here's what he had to say.
You have sea ice, which is melting at a rate that the Arctic Ocean now increasingly is exposed. In 5 years, scientists predict we will have the first ice-free Arctic summer.
Well, that was 2008 he said that. So 2013, did we have an Arctic-free, ice where we without ice in the Arctic? It was
one of those
scare tactics that never came about. And you alerted to this earlier about climate change. We have so many years. Well, here's a warning he gave out back in 2008 warning us, you know, we're heading into the is going to get so warm, we're not going to have ice.
Mm, Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, the left should be very happy about that, because for a long time they wanted to eliminate ICE, didn't they?
Yeah.
And of course, I mean immigration, that version of ICE.
That's
on the border.
True.
But actually, this is ridiculous. You know, we've heard these predictions over and over and over again. The late Dr. Walter Williams, excellent professor and commentator, wrote about this years ago in a piece titled Environmentalists' Wild Predictions. And let me just give you a few examples from that piece, because this is really going to raise people's eyebrows. You had the first Earth Day celebration, Jim, in 1969. Well, there was an environmentalist there, Nigel Calder, and he said, quote, "The threat of a new ice age must now stand alongside nuclear war as a likely source of wholesale death and misery for mankind." C.C. Wallen, I'm quoting Williams again, of the World Meteorological Organization, said, "The cooling since 1940 has been large enough and consistent enough that it will not soon be reversed." Okay. Well, Jim, now we have the great Professor Paul Ehrlich, who wrote that book, The Population Bomb, which had predictions that themselves bombed. Well, he predicted that there would be a major food shortage in the United States in the 1970s. That's what he said. He said millions, hundreds of millions of people are going to starve to death, okay? And that by 1999, you know what our population was supposed to have been? It was supposed to have declined, Jim, to 22.6 million people.
Oh,
that
my.
Was it. Now it stands at about 335 million in reality. He also said,
in the U.S.
Oh, yeah, the U.S. Mm-hmm. He also said, "If I were a gambler, I would take even money that England will not even exist in the year 2000. Now, I could go on and on and on, but the point is we've heard these predictions for a long time. Paul Ehrlich, who I was just citing, he's still fated by the media, by the way. He's in his 90s. He's still around. I think it was 60 Minutes, if I'm not mistaken, that interviewed him a while back, as if he's somehow a credible expert. Now, here's how I like to put it, Jim. Let's say that you knew of a stockbroker whose stock picks had been terribly errant for 25, 30 years straight, okay? Would you listen to his investment advice now?
Wouldn't
you do that?
No.
The whole thing is absolutely ridiculous. I'll give you one more example off the top of my head. In 1894, a major London paper, I think maybe it was the London Illustrated News, but don't quote me on that, stated that by 1934, London would be buried under 9 feet of horse manure.
Hmm.
They issued that warning. I'm not kidding, okay? Now, what was the thinking? The thinking was that, well, everyone uses horses as a mode of transportation. The population is increasing precipitously. All these people riding horses in London, it's going to be so densely populated. What state are we going to be in? Well, what happened, though? What happened, though, was that people could not foresee the march of technology, that a completely new mode of transportation, the automobile, would become status quo and would relegate horses to just being used for recreational purposes. And I don't want to get too far afield here. We can discuss this later, but that's the point. We really don't know where technology is going to take
right.
us, but we've heard these ridiculous predictions forever, haven't we?
We sure have. And as I was going through school, I was warned that we're heading toward an ice age. Is there any kind of norm or ideal average temperature of the Earth? Because, you know, we're getting warmer. What is the ideal temperature?
Oh, you read my mind. This is good. I'm glad. I don't know if you got access to my computer, but here's the thing. Okay, I want to give people a couple of arguments that actually can win others over. A couple of years ago, I was talking to this fellow who was sort of on the fence on climate change. He was pretty much convinced, but he was open-minded. So I presented him with the first of these arguments, but I'm going to give you two. You say, listen, if you can answer two simple questions, the second one is in two parts, maybe you can win me over. The first one is, what is the ideal average temperature for the Earth? Now, the person's not going to be able to answer the question, Jim, but here's the thing, follow up with, but wait a second. If we don't know what the ideal average temperature is, then how can we know if the given climate change, whether caused by man or induced by nature, is good or bad? Because we can't know if it's bringing us closer to or moving us further away from that ideal average temperature.
Mm-hmm.
We can't know that, okay? Now, of course, this you don't have to tell the person, but in a way it's sort of a trick question because there is no ideal average temperature. There's just a range within which the temperature must remain for there to be life on Earth. And if it's colder, then polar animals tend to do a little better. If it's warmer, then tropical animals tend to do a little better. But understand this. Even the New York Times admitted years ago, wrote one or two articles about this at least, Jim, that cold weather is far more dangerous than hot weather, leads to far more death. Warmth breeds life. That's why you see many, many more life forms in the tropics than in the Arctic. I think 10 times as many is the figure. But let me get to my second argument, then I'll shut up. Okay, I gave you the first one. The second one is this. Ask people, what percentage of the atmosphere is carbon dioxide? Now, many people, if not most, Jim, will think it's about 20%. But actually, it's 0.04%. That means 400 parts per million. At certain points in the Earth's history, it's been as high as 5,000 parts per million. Okay? In fact, it's sort of historically low right now. So then just ask people, how is it that fluctuations in this trace gas can possibly endanger all life on Earth when, again, it's really right now almost at historically low levels? How is that possible?
Well, you just stumped the promoter of you know, false thinking. Hey, the New American, this is something else that I found very interesting, that a recent report on the New American said that the climate reanalyzer data set only goes back to 1979. Is that accurate? I mean, how can they proclaim hottest days ever when they're only going back to 1979?
Yeah, I mean, that's according to that article in the New American. I work for them. They are very, very accurate. You know, look, as I said, there's so much confusion here. It's just so ridiculous. And remember the people we're trusting. These are the people who mismanaged the COVID situation. These are the people who said safe and effective. These are the people who said you take the so-called vaccine, you won't get sick, and you won't spread the virus.
Right, right.
Joe Biden and others said that. And all of these requirements to take the shot, okay, under threat of job loss, were based on that supposition that you couldn't spread the virus. But then a long time ago already, we learned that that was not true.
Right.
And these are the same people who will claim that a boy can become a girl just by willing it. Now, it may sound a little funny mentioning that, but that does tell the tale. If you don't know that, what do you know? Are these people trustworthy at all? Would we take their advice on anything? You have to look at all of this very, very suspiciously, Jim. You really do.
Solomon Duke is with us here today, writer for The New American and many, many other publications as well. We're discussing the issue today, climate change or climate hoax. And I found it very interesting as to just the plethora of stories that are out there, friends. I put in the words climate change in a search engine on the web just before coming into the studio. Within half a second, just over half a second, over 2.4 billion websites came up, to over 2.4 billion hits on this issue. And by the way, I decided I'm just going to put in the name of Jesus Christ on in here as well. Well, that was reduced to 394 million, 2.4 billion, 394 million. That would tell us something there as well as far as the media's coverage of these issues. We're going to take a quick break here on Crosstalk, Climate Change or Climate Hoax. Selwyn Duke is our guest, back in 1 minute here on the VCY American Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, geologist and president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, how fast are the continents eroding?
Chris, the answer to this question might surprise you. We know the volume of the continents above sea level. When rain falls on the continents, it erodes them grain by grain, and we can measure how much solid material is in the water as it finally reaches the ocean. As it turns out, the continents are eroding at such a rapid rate, they'll all be gone in 14 million years. But according to evolution, the continents are hundreds of millions of years old. Yet they're eroding so fast that they're not going to last. Something is wrong with that millions of years picture. The measurements we make are much more in line with the creation flood young Earth account. The continents don't fit the evolution idea, but they do fit the back to Genesis idea.
For more on the relevance of creation, visit us on the web at www.icr.org. That's www.icr.org.
Climate change or climate hoax? Our topic today, Selwyn Duke is our guest, writer for The New American. His articles and numerous others at thenewamerican.com, thenewamerican.com. Selwyn, do you also have a site?
Yes, I do. It's selwynduke.com, and it's basically a repository for just about all my work.
Okay, yeah. And folks, Selwyn is spelled S-E-L-W-Y-N, selwynduke.com. And find more of his writings there as well. Very interesting as to all the hype that is going on today. I mean, we are told that there is a inseparable link between the activities of mankind and the increase of carbon in the air, henceforth the increase in temperature as well. Is there such a link? I mean, how do we refute this issue here? Because, I mean, we're seeing all these cutbacks. We must, you know, get rid of gasoline engines and gas stoves and appliances, and we must be all electric. What kind of traceable link is there between the activities of man and carbon and the increase in temperature?
Well, I'm not convinced that there is a link at all. Again, you hear a lot of conflicting information. For instance, I have heard, and I do tend to believe it, Jim, that actually the increase in carbon dioxide does not precipitate a rise in temperature, but actually follows it. And here's how I've heard this explained. Just like if you heat up a can of carbonated water or heat up carbonated water, what happens is that the gas, the CO2 from it, escapes. Well, the same thing happens with the oceans, I understand. As they heat up over time, and it takes a very long time, they release more CO2. That causes the CO2 levels to rise in the atmosphere. And that's why, under this theory, the rising CO2 levels would actually follow the increasing temperatures. But, you know, the whole issue here is that this is all up in the air. This is all unproven. But based upon this unproven, really, I think, very fanciful global warming thesis, they want to completely reorder the world. They want to change the way we grow food, the way we drive around. They want to seize control over our lives. And that should scare all of us. And what do they really cite here, Jim? Well, they cite consensus. Well, first of all, there isn't the consensus among scientists that they claim there is. But not only that, consensus is not a term of science. It's a term of politics. And the man who pointed this out. Global warming, I know a catchy name, but that was just the name, at Caltech, yeah, around 2003. And he made this point. He said, when you hear people talking about consensus, that means you're subject to a con. That means they can't deliver the goods, because if they had the proof, the scientific proof, they would present it. As he pointed out, you would never say consensus holds that the sun is 93 million miles from the earth, or consensus holds that E equals MC squared, or consensus holds that force equals mass times acceleration. No, those are scientific facts. And when you have scientific facts, you can present the science, you can replicate it, you can prove it. You only point to consensus when you don't have the facts. That's why consensus is a term of politics. It's not a term of science. And we should not be allowing these people to seize control over world economies and our lives and micromanage us like puppeteers based on false claims of consensus.
You know, it's happening in many different realms, and we find that the media is often playing into this as well. I find it interesting, for instance, with the Canadian wildfires that media has been blaming on climate change, and yet police across Canada are searching for and arresting arsonists. I mean, we have the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. They're searching for suspects that were in the area before the wildfires broke out. The RCMP has arrested several arsonists who have been charged with lighting fires across several provinces, Nova Scotia, Yukon, and Alberta. But the media claims, well, it's climate change. So we got media saying climate change, RCMPs, they're arresting arsonists.
Yeah, well, I guess they're right in a way. The climate has changed, the political climate, and that's why
right.
you've got these maniacs running around lighting fires, right?
Yeah.
You know, it is ridiculous. You'd think this was the first time we ever had disasters in the world. I mean, the truth is that that's the story of the Earth. And you have to remember, climate is cyclical. You know this. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. But we've had about five major ice ages, I believe, five or six, whatever the figure is. And then we have cycles of warming and cooling that occur all throughout history. I mean, there are 100 to 115,000 year glacial periods that are very cold that are followed by 10 to 15,000 year interglacial periods. And by the way, Jim, we now have been for a long time in an interglacial, a warmer period.
Hmm.
And that's a very good thing because, again, warmth breeds life. But we've been in this interglacial for perhaps 11,500 years. I read a source today from the U.S. government claiming we actually might have been in this interglacial for 17,000 years already.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, we're poised for another ice age. So we shouldn't be worried about warming temperatures. We should be worried about naturally cooling temperatures
mm-hmm.
because, again, that's what really poses a danger. That's when survival will be a real struggle, when you have cooling temperatures.
And others who would hold even to a younger Earth of 6,000-year Earth creation would certainly, we see what's happened with glaciers, don't deny that whatsoever, certainly have a little different perspective on number of
right.
years here. But we can claim this. I mean, here's a scripture from Genesis 8:22. It says, while the earth remaineth, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. I mean, that's a promise from God himself.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, absolutely. If you have faith, and I'm a man of faith, too, then obviously it puts everything in perspective.
Right.
Because you're going to be a good shepherd of the earth. We're called to be that.
Yep.
There's no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
But we also will understand that eventually all of this will pass away. Nothing is forever except
yeah.
God, our immortal souls, truth. Those things are eternal. The things of this world will pass away. So we're not going to have the same kind of fear that these secular people have. And really, this global warming nonsense has become sort of a secular religion. You know, as Emile Kammerts said, the Belgian playwright, I'm paraphrasing now, but when people cease to believe in God, it's not that they start to believe in nothing. It's that they'll believe in anything. And that helps explain a lot of the agendas we see nowadays, the anthropogenic global warming agenda, the so-called transgender agenda,
yeah.
and so many others. These are people who are disconnected from truth, from objective moral reality, and they're just awash in confusion. But, of course, that's a bit of a different issue, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, as you're aware, there are great efforts to curb this carbon dioxide. We're seeing the advancement of the carbon capture pipeline through the Midwest, destroying farmland. It's going to really strike at private property rights. Don't we need carbon? I mean, why are we trying to collect it and pipe it into the ground when we really need it?
Yeah, well, let me point out something else. The term carbon is a propaganda term because calling CO2 carbon is like calling water H2O hydrogen.
Hmm.
CO2 is not carbon. CO2 is a gas that is necessary for life on Earth. In fact, there's a reason why botanists pump it into their greenhouses because, again, it facilitates plant growth. When CO2 levels are higher, crop yields become greater. It's a very, very positive thing. In fact, I think it was in 2013, Jim, you'll find this interesting, an astrobiologist named Jack O'Malley James predicted that life on Earth would eventually end because of too little CO2 in the atmosphere. He said the levels have been dropping, like I mentioned earlier. At one time, we had 5,000 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere. Now it's down to 400 parts per million. The levels would continue dropping, he was saying, until they became too low for plants to photosynthesize. If plants can't do that, they die, then the whole food chain collapses. That's it. Life
wow.
ends. Now, you don't have to worry about that either because he said this wouldn't happen for another billion years. But my point is this. I don't think there's anything to fear from CO2, do you?
No. You know, I want to cover a couple other issues with you, Selwyn, and one of these is Bill Gates. For years now, he has been trying to capture the so-called, the carbon dioxide or to stop it. He's trying to combat so-called global warming, that he's looking at dimming the sun, geoengineering. shed some light, and no pun intended, but shed some light, if you would, on what Gates is trying to accomplish and what methods is he trying to use for this so-called geoengineering. It seems to have the attention from the Biden administration.
Yeah. Maybe you know more about the methods than I do. I think the idea is that you sort of pump some kind of mist into the atmosphere, right? Something that would be akin to a dust to help block out the sun. But again, you probably know more about that than I do. But what's scary about this is the kind of micromanaging or attempted micromanaging of the environment that should really scare us. We shouldn't be that scared of natural cycles, though they do occur and they can be problematic. But you have someone here who's trying to play God. Now, let's say he can effectively do this. Don't know if he can or not, but let's say the government could. Well, again, we're perhaps poised to enter another ice age, and you want to exacerbate that by trying to block out the sun? This is just insanity. I mean, this is something that is almost poetic. It's the kind of thing that you might see in a movie. People try to play God, and then what happens? Of course, it all blows up in their faces, and they're taught a lesson, maybe even an ordained lesson, where God says, hey, you know what? This is what you want. I'll give it to you good and hard. That should really scare us. I mean, Bill Gates, he's another one of these people who have very, very big egos, and unfortunately, they just start to think that they can be the end-all and be-all, and they can play God because, of course, they're godless themselves.
President Biden also has been had increasing pressure put on him to declare a climate emergency. What's your reaction to that? What powers would this give him in such a declaration?
Well, that's a good question. Would they be akin to the powers of martial law? I mean, we do know that recently some emails were uncovered. This was at the New American as well. This was an email exchange, I'm quoting now, involving Joe Goffman, Principal Deputy Assistant Administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, and other EPA staffers, including Dan Utek, the EPA's chief of staff. And what did they show, Jim? Well, they appeared to show that Biden is again considering a climate emergency for the United States. Okay, and it says here, climate alarmists believe that such a proclamation would give the president wide authority to act unilaterally on so-called climate issues.
That's scary.
And, yeah, it is very scary. And I know we're running out of time here on this segment, but we've already seen a test run for this with COVID, haven't we?
Yes.
With the lockdowns. People tolerated that. Well, now they might think they could do this with climate, except climate would give them a pretext for instituting such lockdowns or something akin to that in perpetuity, because COVID at least diminished in severity and faded away. But this climate crisis, it's never going to fade away, right, Jim? It's always going to be there, that boogeyman. Like, we have always been at war with East Asia, right? From 1984, we have always been at war.
You know,
and that kind of thing.
And that's what's so interesting because, it's insane reading some of these reports and rationale. We live next to Lake Michigan, one of the Great Lakes. When they've had low water levels, it's due to climate change. If they've had high water levels, it's due to climate change. I mean, it's rather convenient. Whatever happens, you just blame it on climate change, and the sky is falling.
Oh, I know. You read my mind again. Absolutely. They used to say it was just global warming. The temperatures are going to rise. Then maybe that didn't materialize the way they'd predicted. Then they said, well, actually, it can also cause temperatures to drop. It can also cause weather to become more volatile. So no matter what happens, their thesis is correct.
We'll be back in just 1 minute, folks. We're talking about climate change or climate hoax. Selwyn Duke is our guest today. Website, thenewamerican.com, and also selwynduke.com. Back in just 1 minute, you're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America.
The New England Primer was introduced in Boston in 1690 by Benjamin Harris. It was the first textbook printed in America. For a century after its introduction, it was the beginning textbook for students, and until well into the 20th century, it continued to be a principal text in all types of American schools. The founders, as well as millions of other Americans, learned to read from the New England Primer and the Bible. The core of the Primer is its rhyming alphabet, such as for letter A, in Adam's Fall, we send all. The letter G, as runs the glass, man's life doth pass. It also included lessons for youth, Bible questions, and a shorter catechism. A pocket-size hardcover edition of this 1777 historical reprint is available for a donation of $9 or more by calling VCY at 1-800-729-9829. Ask for the New England Primer.
Tuned to Crosstalk on VCY America, and our topic today, climate change or climate hoax. And friends, no doubt you've been having some questions pertaining to this issue. Yeah, you hear the media hype, you see the media reports, and maybe you've got some questions pertaining to the issue. Our phone number to Crosstalk today is 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Someone, we are told the sky is falling and we've got to do something, but the question is, what can we do? Is there anything we can do to stop or moderate temperatures, to make it warmer or cooler? We have this doom and gloom forecast that's before us, and we've been told for years, unless we do something now, so many years from now, things are not going to be so, fare so well for us. Your response to this issue?
Well, my response is that the people who are inclined to believe in this global warming alarmism should hope that you and I are correct, because you have to remember a lot of these so-called experts who warn about climate change have said, oh, it's already too late. In fact, remember, we had those doom and gloom predictions in the 80s and 90s already, where they said, oh, we only have 10 or 12 years to change things, otherwise the sky is going to fall. And in fact, Bjorn Lomborg of the Copenhagen Consensus Center, he did a study some years back, and he found that lowering the temperature by just one-third of 1 degree by the century's end, Jim, would cost $100 trillion.
Oh my.
No, I did not misspeak. That's 100 trillion with a T, dollars. In other words, even if all this were going on, there would be nothing we realistically could do about it. So I think people should just look at the facts, and they should stop panicking, and they should stop listening to these fearmongers who, like I said, have been wrong on everything. COVID, so-called transgenderism, you name it, they don't have a good track record. They're that stockbroker who's been wrong for the last 3 decades consistently.
Again, folks, our number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. Our lines are all filled right now, but as soon as you hear somebody hang up, that's your opportunity to give us a call. We're going to begin with Mark, calling from Monroe, Wisconsin. Mark, you're on the air.
Yeah, my comment is back in when Obama was transforming America, it was John Kerry who propagated global warming was America's biggest threat.
Yeah.
Anyhow, what I'm getting at here is now that COVID-19 is kind of taking a back seat, not that there won't be yet another advance to some sort of something along those lines in the future. Now I believe that the whole climate change is coming to the forefront, and that's my concern, because it looks like the globalists are going to put that on the front page, and if necessary, they're going to go back to another some kind of COVID-19 agenda.
Thank you, Mark, for that. Indeed, Selwyn, we need another national emergency. That we're able to deal with, and as Rahm Emanuel, never let an emergency go to waste as such, is this going to fill the gap after the COVID-19 pandemic is over?
My, that's something. You know, Jim, I think you are reading my mind. I was about to quote Emanuel, too, so there you go. You know, it very well may, and the thing is, though, this is how I always put it in perspective for people. I say, listen, you have to understand, tragedy will befall man. We will experience disasters. History teaches us that. But you'll also notice that what really was a problem historically was not the thing that the greater mass of people was worried about. How many people foresaw the fall of Rome in 476 AD? How many people foresaw the Great Depression? How many people foresaw the real threat posed by Hitler? Winston Churchill warned about it, but people shrugged that off. And it's no different today. disaster will befall us. There's no doubt about it. But it's not going to be what everyone is worried about, the so-called global warming. Who knows what it's going to be? Mm-hmm. Maybe artificial intelligence. Maybe nuclear war. Maybe something relating to nanotechnology. Maybe gamma ray bursts. Maybe a roving black hole. No one knows. Only God knows. But I very much doubt that for the first time ever, it's going to be the thing that everyone, including the pseudo-elites, are worried about.
Don is our next caller. Hi, Don. You're on the air.
Hey. I think your guest would be better informed if he read the Bible and looked at the world through a biblical worldview instead of a secular worldview.
Well, appreciate that, Don. We are looking at, we're refuting what's coming from the secular worldview today. Any response you want to give, Selwyn?
I'll just say that he's probably alluding to theological differences here, and that's all I can say. We may have theological differences, but I'm a man of faith, and I do look at things through that prism. That said, sometimes I speak in secular terms to appeal to various audiences. It all depends what your audience is, you know. Different strategies for different battlefields, right?
Don, thank you for the call. Adam is next. You're on the air.
Yeah, so I was calling about geoengineering. You guys were saying you don't really know about how they do it. So I was just calling to inform that they use jets, and they're actually spraying in the air all the time. Like today I can see it. It even streaks, and it turns into clouds. And they've actually been on the view in had a lady bragging about how they can make it snow more. I believe it was on the View a couple weeks ago.
Okay, so chemicals, but somehow blocking the sunlight, and some of the methods used to reflect the sunlight back upward again as well. So thank you, Adam, for that. Let's go to Holly in Anderson, Indiana. Hi, Holly, you're on the air.
I did have a gentleman that kind of called in and kind of pointed towards the same kind of reason I'm calling. I do believe over a period of time, the ozone layer may have become thinner, or this is what I hear, because people get sunburned a lot easier. I don't know if that's true or false, but my real question was, is that, yeah, according to biblical standards, we are supposed to burn up, or the earth will burn up and be a new heaven and earth after that. Am I correct?
Well, yeah,
and that was
yes,
all
and yeah, thank you, Holly. And on that issue, yeah, judgment is going to come. I mean, as we read in 2 Peter and the book of Revelation as well, such judgment is going to come, but that certainly is going to be caused by God in judgment, not going to be caused by too many automobiles out there. Thank you for the call. Mark in Rotunda, Florida, you're on the air.
Yeah, my question, well, not really a question, more of a comment. I find it interesting that June 21st, we had this X1.1 solar flare off the sun up till recent past couple of days here, and we've had this heat wave, but the media and the so-called meteorologists never talk about solar flares affecting our environment. That's my statement. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Any comment on solar flares?
Solar flares. Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, the sun is our source of heat, so obviously if you see fluctuations in sun activity, then it's going to greatly affect our environment. There's no doubt about it. I mean, this science is just so, so complex, and this is the problem with listening to people such as Al Gore and John Kerry. These people know nothing about this issue, nothing whatsoever, and we want to let them turn our lives upside down based on their cock and bull theory? Sorry. Don't allow that. You'll rue the day you did.
You know, and the thing that's so interesting, if they really believed the things that they said, would John Kerry be going around in this jet all over the planet and spewing forth, you know, all the things, all the emissions that he speaks against? He can't believe what he says.
Yeah, or would Barack Obama be buying shorefront property? Maybe that's even a better example.
Yeah.
But, you know, you also have to remember that these people, Jim, are true pseudo-elites. Don't call them elites. That compliments them. They're pseudo-elites. And I understand their mindset perfectly because I know human psychology and human nature. These people really believe they're above everyone else. That's part of their master status. And they believe that their mission is so good and so great and so important that they and they alone deserve a special dispensation from the rules that they prescribe for everyone else. It's something else that makes them so dangerous.
We've got Skip calling from Arizona. Skip, you're on the air.
Yeah, hey, I'd like to make a comment, which is a very good show. And it's a what I'm thinking is that if they try to block out the sun, we need the sun for plants to grow, the trees to grow, to filter out the monoxide carbon in the air, to give us fresh air to breathe, which is they're going to do. If they try to do, if they do that, it's going to create health reasons for people to breathe. And it reminds me of a movie I once saw with Charlton Heston in it, Soylent Green. That's what I think it could turn out to be.
Thank you for the call. And, you know, Soylent, as it relates to this, too, you block the sunlight, you're going to be impacting our food supply.
Well, absolutely. There's no question about it. Like I said, when you have higher CO2 levels, now I'm not just talking about temperature, it facilitates plant growth and crop yields. And it's funny that your caller mentioned Soylent Green because, you know, Jim, I just saw that movie again a few months ago, and it's funny because it was set, I think, around 2022, and it predicted this world where New York City would have this enormous population, I think it was 40 million or something like that. Don't quote me on the exact number, but as we can see, it was another prediction that just didn't come to pass. And when was Soylent Green made? It was made in the late 60s, I believe, when everyone was worried about overpopulation. Yep. So it reflected the spirit of the age, and the lesson there is that what we're worrying about now, again, reflects the spirit of the age, not the spirit of the ageless or the Holy Spirit. And, of course, it is the latter that we should be looking towards.
We have Mary next calling from Milwaukee. Mary, you're on the air.
Yeah, I called last week about Islam, and I'm a new Christian, and when I first read about Genesis, where God created the new earth, not the new earth, the earth that he created, I mean, I was taken aback. Yes, I want to be a good steward to the earth. I hate the contributing to garbage and all that. I don't want to be a liberal environmentalist, the God that created this earth, not to be polluted.
Yeah.
And it just breaks my heart that all this carbon emission is going into the earth that God did not create. I mean, help me out on this. I don't want to be a liberal environmentalist.
Yeah, you're talking about the carbon.
Can God create this earth, though?
You're talking about the carbon pipeline, Mary, that's going to pump it into the earth?
All this air pollution from the factories and that, too, and raw sewage being dumped into lake and everything. We're supposed to be good stewards, but at the same time, I don't want to be a liberal environmentalist.
Okay, well, you don't have to be. We can be good stewards of the earth. And so that's why we do put laws and safeguards in place as far as pollution, those types of things. But what we are looking at is an extreme on the other end, whereby we are looking to control and even limit population. Whereas God said to be fruitful and multiply, so many of these tactics are used to bring down the population across the planet.
Well, absolutely. And I'd like to address that caller because obviously she was very upset and very sincere. I want to point out something. I think she said these things that God did not create. Well, you have to remember, God did create the oil that we have in the earth, the fossil fuels. And when we burn those fuels, well, what's within them is released. But again, God created that. So no, you can't say that God didn't create that. Now, as far as being a good shepherd of the earth, yes, we shouldn't be polluting streams. And as you indicated, Jim, we have regulations pertaining to that. And I want to point out something this may make your caller feel better. We're actually doing in the Western world very, very well with the environment. We have more forested area now in the United States than we had 100 years ago by a good margin. Our water and air, last I heard, were cleaner than they were 60 years ago. We're doing very, very well. Where they're not doing so well is in the third world and nations such as China. Now, why is that? Stop me if I'm going on too long. But there are two prerequisites for having a good environment.
Tell you what, we are going to have to take a break here, so let's come right back to those two prerequisites. Thank you, Mary, for the call, and we'll find out about that. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Well, it was a six-month project, and it was recently completed and launched. What am I talking about? I went into the studio and recorded 20 classic hymns for the grand piano. And the response, well, quite frankly, it has shocked me. What has shocked me the most is the number of men. And I'm talking about guys that are retired generals in the military, other guys that are, you know, big, strong, masculine guys and fields like farmers and electricians and carpenters who are emailing our ministry and saying how much they appreciate hearing the hymns. One retired general friend of mine said, America needs this now more than ever. They need to hear the words of these hymns. That's exactly why we spent 6 months producing it. With all this going on in the world, there's something that brings peace and comfort like the good old hymns. WVWTV.com, you can hear them for free. Hope they minister to you. I'm Brian House.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Our topic today is dealing with climate change or climate hoax. We're joined by Selwyn Duke today, writer for The New American and other publications as well. You can read stories at thenewamerican.com or selwynduke.com, S-E-L-W-Y-N, selwynduke.com. Selwyn, sorry to interrupt you here, just going into the last break. You were just ready to talk about those two prerequisites, so go ahead and set that stage for us once again.
Yeah, the two prerequisites for a clean environment are having freedom in the sense of being able to choose your leaders and having prosperity. Why? I'll make it quick. When you cannot choose your leaders, you can't hold them accountable, and then history teaches that they will rape the environment when it's convenient for them, as the Chinese so-called communists have done, as Joseph Stalin did, as Saddam Hussein did. Why prosperity? Well, the Chinese have a saying that pertains to this. When there's food on the table, there are many problems. When there's no food on the table, there's only one problem. People who are desperate are not going to worry about clear-cutting the rainforest or killing the last white rhino. Like it or not, environmentalism is a luxury of prosperous people. And this is why the freest, most prosperous nations tend to have the best environments.
Tom is next. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Yeah, I just have a comment in regard. I've never took much into this global warming or climate change or whatever the flavor of the day is, but I'm always reminded of what scriptures say. It's either in Jeremiah or Isaiah, where the word says the earth will kindle coals of fire at the brightness of his coming. Now, for the righteous, that's a good thing. That means Christ is coming. For the ungodly, it's going to get a lot hotter. And in Peter, he says the elements will burn away with a fervent heat.
Yeah.
So that's your. I'll listen to the response. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Tom. And yeah, as we mentioned before, that indeed is referring to a future time of judgment that's coming upon the earth. Thank you, Zach in River Falls. You're on the air.
Hi. So I just wanted to say things like the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus distract us from God, and I think climate change is being used in the same way. In times of disaster, it's distracting us, and that's what they use is climate change to distract us from returning to God as well.
Thank you. And as someone, as you pointed out earlier, they really made this a God in itself.
Yeah, their left-wing agendas, all these things that they worship. And by the way, I'll just add one more thing, getting back to that caller who was very upset. You know, you have to understand that this global warming agenda is being used as a pretext for actually destroying forest. Two examples. In the North Maine Woods, they have this plan, I guess it's maybe in progress right now, to decimate the North Maine Woods, which is the largest forest east of the Pacific Northwest, because they want to facilitate a green energy project bringing energy down from Canada. Second example. In Germany, they were going to build this wind farm. Again, I think they're probably in the process of doing it. And in order to make way for it, they were going to destroy a pre-Columbian forest in Germany. Now, they don't have many of those in Germany, probably the only one. This is real environmentalism. This is something real. You either have more trees or you have fewer. And I remember in the 1970s when everyone was worried about cutting down too many trees. That's something real. The whole global warming agenda is not.
Jewel is next. Hi, Jewel, you're on the air.
That's something.
Okay, good. Jewel, Tony in Neillsville, you're on the air.
I want to add maybe a little bit of humor to this comment. And my comment is that it was an episode of Gilligan's Island that was almost on topic to this, about wanting to this goon wanting to rule the world and coming to the island in a little boat.
Hello,
Oh, sorry about that. You still there, Tony?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, was so worried about this little boat.
He come and took them to an island and put them all in glass tubes and put their voices in different bodies and telling Mr. Howell that he wanted to rule the world. And Mr. Howell says, even I'm not that crazy.
Yeah. Thank you. Arthur in Kentucky, you're on the air. Hello, Arthur.
Yeah, hello. This is Arthur. I just wanted to add, the quote you give from Genesis,
yeah,
great, and God creating the oil and everything because he made it for Israel, so give them something to be rich over. But I want to add one verse people always leave out here, and it's Amos 3:15, and it explains why the North and South Pole does get a little warmer, but God deemed that thousands of years ago. Amos 3:15, and I will smite the winter house with the summer house, and the houses of ivory shall perish, and the great houses shall have an end, saith the Lord. The winter house is the North and South Poles. Just wanted to add that in there, something to think about.
Thank you, Arthur. And our final call is Brian, who is calling from Northern Kentucky. Brian, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. We know what happens when we go back to Genesis. But the question, well, not really a question, that I'd like to ask your guest is, how much carbon dioxide goes out into the air when we have a big volcano eruption? Isn't that quite a bit more than what man-made climate is doing?
Thank you, Brian.
Yeah. No, it's a tremendous amount of CO2. I can't give you the exact figure, but yes, I've read about this as well. And again, there's nothing to fear, I don't believe, from CO2. Like I said, it's a gas that's necessary for life on Earth. Mm-hmm. And they've tried to demonize it. That's why they use the term carbon. No, it's not carbon. It's carbon dioxide.
Great. Thank you for the call here, Brian. And someone, what would you like to leave with our listeners on this topic today?
Yeah, well, I would say, please use those arguments that I articulated earlier. I think with them, maybe you can change people's minds if they're on the fence. And I think you would agree with this. Also, try to buttress your faith. Look to God. Understand that good always wins in the end. In fact, good has already won because God is outside of time. And if you believe in God, you're not going to fear demise in this world the way a secularist will.
Yeah, indeed.
That's the bottom line.
Selwyn Duke, our guest today. You can check out his articles, selwynduke.com, also thenewamerican.com, addressing this on many the stories and topics, guest writers as well. And Selwyn, thanks for carving out the time to joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim. I really appreciate your having me, and God bless you and your audience.
Great, and to you as well. Selwyn Duke, our guest here today on Crosstalk. And again, folks, the critical issues that we are confronted with daily. The news is giving a narrative to put that fear in you. Remember, it's God that's not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.